Welcome to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 73. I'm your host, Wolfgang Vashaw. Before we get to the interview, I'd like to let you know that we have recently set up a Facebook page. Like us at facebook.com/CYC Podcast to stay up to date on all our episodes, past and future. I live in Toronto, Canada. In the past month, the Board of Health has recommended opening 3 safe injection sites for people who use injection drugs here in Toronto. This is a response to a significant rise in drug overdose deaths in the city. The federal government has also just made naloxone, a medication to reverse the effects of opium overdose, available without a prescription. Both of these are examples of harm reduction. Both of these are ways to prevent deaths from overdose. Anyone who has worked with youth knows that drugs are part of many young people's lives. However, harm reduction as an approach to working with young people is still quite controversial for some. Our guest today is Murtaza Majid, who is the coordinator for Youth Rise, an international youth-focused harm reduction program based out of London. Murtaza has worked with Médecins du Monde and was the coordinator for the Afghan National AIDS Control Program. I reached Murtaza in Kabul, Afghanistan, where he lives. Hello, Murtaza, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Wolfgang. Thank you for having me for this interview.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So let's start with, what is Youth Rise?
Youth Rise is an international network which was set up 8 years ago on the vision of promoting young people who use drugs to have more access to health, to have more access to harm reduction services, which was clearly not available and still is not available. So Youth Rise has been created with the idea of to involve young people who use drugs into the policy making, into the advocacy, and to promote youth-friendly services for harm reduction.
So there's lots of stuff in there I want to touch on, but let's start with, what is harm reduction? Could you give our listeners a sort of a synopsis of what harm reduction is?
Harm reduction is a pragmatic approach which was created. It's a social and health approach, which is a practical one for people who are unwilling or unable to quit drugs. It's a measure or it's an approach in order to reduce the risks related to drug use, in order to prevent HIV, overdose, and other health risk and social risk of drug users.
And why do you think that it's effective for young people? Would not it be better if young people didn't use drugs?
The idea of harm reduction is, as I said in the beginning, it's a pragmatic approach. So it means that we, as people who are involved in harm reduction, believe that society lives with drugs and there are people who use drugs in the society. So is young people. So it makes no difference if you're an adult or a young guy or a child who use drugs. You need harm reduction in order to have basic survival of risks related to drug use. So that's why harm reduction is important for adults and young people both.
So sometimes there's a particular resistance to young people and harm reduction. So, for example, in Vancouver, another city here in Canada, they have a couple safe injection sites, but one of them, the most famous one, is called Insight. And they have very, very restrictive policies around letting young people into the safe injection site. Do you have any thoughts on why there is that fear or resistance, particularly when it comes to young people in harm reduction?
First of all, I would like to congratulate Canada for opening the safe injecting houses, which is a very modern approach to harm reduction, which is pretty nice for us. And then the idea of safe injection houses was created with the same approach of believing that it's because we in harm reduction believe that drugs are not safe. But what makes it more unsafer and more riskier is the policies around drug use imposed from some governments. So having this in mind, If you see the results of safer injecting houses, it has vastly affected people who use drugs and who inject to prevent the overdose and to have more knowledge about their safer injection. And it goes the same for young people. So when they have more restriction on youth going to these centers or having access to harm addiction services, it's basically the fear of that they want to they want that young people do not use drugs. But statistically and evidently, we believe that there are young people who use drugs, and drugs have been always with youth and young people since we have generations, right? So having this resistance doesn't work because there are many examples of overdoses for young people. Well, when you do not give access to harm reduction for young people, it means that they get more marginalized. And then they don't have access to information, they don't have access to education, and they cannot understand the risks involved in drugs. Recently, 2 weeks ago, I have a very bad example in Ireland where they have safer injecting house in Ireland. But there was a young guy, 16 years old, who died of overdose because they didn't allow him to have access to do safer injecting houses. So it means that even if we have the safer injecting houses, which is a very nice approach, we should accept that there are young people who use drugs, and it actually, including more young people into those safer injecting houses will help more to reach young people, to allow access to information about drug use, and to teach them more safer drug use and prevent overdose death cases.
What was the response in Ireland when that young person died? I didn't hear about that. Was there a movement to change the rules around access of young people into the safe injection houses?
Well, the stakeholders or colleagues who are running this are using this example to advocate to allow young people into these safe injecting houses now, which is making more movements, and they are trying to more advocate for young people also should be they should remove age restriction to the safer injection houses, because clearly it shows that it's one example, but there are many examples happening who young people die from overdose. Because first they are marginalized, they have hard to access to drugs, and then they have hardly access to clean needles. So that's why Irish people, stakeholders, are advocating to promote access to young people into safe injecting houses.
A lot of our listeners work in organizations, schools, group homes, detention facilities, hospitals, and drugs, as you clearly stated, are illegal in the vast majority of the world, and particularly for young people. So, you know, alcohol, which might be legal for someone over a certain age, would be illegal for somebody under that age, for example. If somebody works in those sorts of organizations, how does a harm reduction approach function? So if I'm working in a group home, I'm not a nurse, I'm not an RN, I can't, do I allow someone to inject drugs in the group home because it's safer than in the washroom of a fast food restaurant?
Yes, it's always it's important to accept that there are some youth and young people who use drugs. And access to clean needles and access to health services in a hospital is a basic human rights for young people. If we are talking about child rights, we have good convention on child rights. So the basic rights of children is to promote health for them. So if a young guy is injecting, so it's always safer to have a better, friendlier environment for them to inject the drugs. Until, of course, I always promote that drugs are not safe to use. That the idea is not, our idea is not that we should allow young people to use drugs. But what would we do with the population of young people who use drugs and they don't have access to health services? So it's much better and it's safer to invest in harm reduction services for young people until they reach to a state where they would be able to quit drugs or access to other treatment services.
My understanding, and please, you know, correct me if you have a different thought. My understanding is a lot of people stop drugs, stop using drugs, or stop harmful use of drugs on their own accord. So, you know, the vast majority of people who use drugs safely, right? So many, many people drink alcohol and they function. Many, many people, you know, smoke marijuana and they function, they have jobs, they have children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that also goes with people who can occasionally use crystal meth or occasionally use cocaine or crack or whatever it might be. Do you agree with that understanding?
Yes, I agree with that. And it's not about the drugs, because clearly if you see the statistics, alcohol kills more people where it's a legal drug, right? Or tobacco kills a lot of people early, but it's a legal drug. So other drugs are also a sort of acceptance that there are some other drugs which exist in our society and people use it. So having more safer way of using it is much better rather than abandoning everybody. Because once you impose a law which prohibits them from taking drugs, then it leads young people to not accept services and they start to be marginalized, which leads us to more health risks rather than stopping drugs. So these approaches doesn't stop drugs. So all drugs are risky, but there are some people who use and they can function very well. And they're very good examples of people who take harder drugs, as they say, and they have a job, they have normal family. So it's not only with alcohol. Any drug, if used, because for me, safety comes from a better, friendlier environment rather than the drug itself. The reason because we have less mortality rate in alcohol consumption is because they have more safer environment and there are more education about alcohol. So the risks are reduced. So if we accept that the other drugs are also available in the society and we have good education on drug use and safer use for people who use drugs, then we will definitely decrease the mortality rate and risks involved in it.
So let's talk about some concrete examples. We spoke about the safe injection houses. There are some countries around the world, and you know, I'm thinking of countries like Portugal and Switzerland, Uruguay, who have, you know, policies across the country which reduce harm. Can you speak to any of those and what the impact has been?
Well, since last 7 years with Portugal, they had in Europe, they were one of the countries which had most drug use problems. So in order to tackle it, they accepted a harm reduction approach towards drugs. First, they accepted that in society we have drug users. There are people who use drugs. Then they decriminalized it and they provided health services to them. And now the result is quite impressive for all European countries and actually other countries in the world, that Portugal is reducing the risks related to drug use and they're reducing the drug problem which they had. And it's not only Portugal, and it's Holland. They have had the same approach and they have a success rate of reducing drug-related harm and especially drug use. And for example, we have other countries like Iran, which is one of the leading countries in Asia for harm reduction, where it's an Islamic country, but still they have accepted harm reduction approach and now they have reduced a lot of risk related to drug use and drug users are now much more in a better state rather than other countries. So harm reduction works and it's an evidence-based approach.
What are some of the policies that have been implemented in Iran from a harm reduction approach?
Clean needles. They have provided clean needles, opiate substitution therapy. They have opened many clinics to give...
Sorry, that was opiate replacement therapy, you said?
Opiate substitution therapy.
Yeah, okay.
And then one of the major things that they did, they accepted that they cannot control drugs inside the prison. So even now in Iran, they have harm reduction services inside prisons, which has decreased a lot HIV, hepatitis, and overdose rates inside prison.
What, looking at those examples of Holland, Iran, Portugal, how have they responded to young people?
And same. They have stopped decriminalizing young people taking drugs. They have opened youth-friendly services for them. They have agreed to provide them harm reduction services. And now young people are much. They have much easier to have access to clean needles and harm reduction services in those countries. It's the same with Holland, with cannabis, where it was at one time it was illegal, and there was a high rate of young people taking cannabis. But once it got legalized, a very big amount of young generation is stopped taking using cannabis, because obviously young people, one thing we have is the curiosity. We like to test new things. So once the information is there, once the education is there, and once it's socially accepted, so we would stop taking it. And I personally asked a few young people in Holland, like, what do you think about the policy you have approached for cannabis? They said, well, before young people would like to take it because it was something illegal and everybody was saying not to use it. So people were using it. But once it's illegal, so now it's every time available. So they don't have to take it as a curious way. So now most people don't take it.
My understanding is we're seeing similar things in the United States of America with Colorado, that they're actually seeing there was a decrease in consumption of marijuana from young people once it became much more available, which I find fascinating and echoes what you're saying.
It happens. Because I as young guy, I've always used drugs, but the more fun for me is a drug which is prohibited or much hard to get access to it. But once it's available, so I know that I have the like for example cannabis. I know that I have cannabis all the time, so I don't have to use it. So I just drink. Late my use, or I use it once a week or twice a week.
So what is the situation in Afghanistan? Afghanistan is widely known, for most recently for the wars that have happened there. Prior to that, was well known for drugs and the drug trade. What is the situation around drugs in Afghanistan right now?
As you said, Afghanistan has always been in the media because of producing drugs. Because we are one of the number one producer of opium and heroin. Like more than 90% of heroin in the world is produced by Afghanistan. But the discussion has only been focused on production of heroin in Afghanistan. No major discussion has been made on consumption of heroin, because we produce more than 500 tons a year of opium in the country, and 10% of that opium is used inside the country. So there is a huge population of drug users. Recent reports shows that more than 3 million people in Afghanistan are using drugs, which is almost 12% of our population. So we have a very pure heroin here. We have less harm reduction services here. And there's a lot of morbidity rates of using heroin on the streets. So it's a very tough situation regarding drug use inside the country.
I know that you were instrumental in setting up a opium replacement therapy program, specifically methadone, in Afghanistan. Are there other harm reduction programs available to anybody, but particularly young people?
Well, there are harm reduction programs in seven major provinces of Afghanistan. Methadone is very limited. The one which my organization brought methadone in the country, it was a pilot project, but then it now luckily World Bank is supporting again to give 500 people methadone. But talking about young people, there's no major discussion about young people having harm reduction services, because it's still, the approach is very classic. They just want to stop young people to take drugs. But because of this war happening in this country, there's no major services for them to access to treatment. So young people on the streets are taking drugs. They are injecting heroin, and they have much, much riskier behaviors rather than adults in the country.
We can't talk about Afghanistan or drugs without talking about the war and the war on drugs. And so I have two questions here. The first is about the war in Afghanistan. Are you aware of any change in drug use? So you're talking about 12% of the population now using drugs, which is phenomenally high, very, very, very high, statistically speaking, compared to many other regions around the world. Is there any correlation, or has there been a change in drug use upon the start of the war in Afghanistan?
If you ask my personal opinion, I believe the war in Afghanistan is based on war on drugs. Because the drug war itself has created a lot of insurgencies and fundamentalism in my country. There are evidence shows that I was one of the guys who was going to the regions where they were cultivating poppy, and they are all ruled by the Taliban regime, which is the government has lower access to them. So the more they produce opium, the more insurgency happens. So it's always for me, Afghanistan had been into this war because of the opium you have in our country, because it's a big business going on in this country, and it leads to corruption, it leads to no democracy in our country, and it leads to low economic and social life.
I'm trying to find a way to talk about the global war on drugs and harm reduction, and it seems to me that there's clearly a correlation between laws forbidding drugs and the illegal production of drugs. What is the relationship between harm reduction and the war on drugs?
Well, clearly, harm reduction and war on drugs are two different paths. People who believe in war on drugs would never support harm reduction. But the philosophy of harm reduction comes from a place where people who promote it says that harm reduction is the solution for war on drugs, because change in policies, change in approaches to drug use, change in approaches to cultivate drugs is a way to get out of this enormous problem on war on drugs.
What's the problem with the war on drugs? Why is it a problem? You know, I think you said earlier that, you know, you see drugs as dangerous, you see drugs as a problem. So why isn't a global initiative trying to end drugs a positive thing?
Because, statistics show that it's been 100 years of war on drugs, or more or less. And clearly, there has been no decrease in drugs in our world. Neither in each country, they have countries with most imposed drug war have suffered more with drug use and drug problems. It means that war on drugs has clearly failed. So we are fighting a war which we don't know who the enemy is. So the war on drugs is a war on the people. It's a war on our societies, where they kill, they put people in prison without any reason, just because they have imposed this strict law of war on drugs.
There was recently an article in Harper's Magazine, that which is an American popular magazine, and in it, the author quotes John Ehrlichman, and Ehrlichman served under President Nixon. And in the article, Ehrlichman clearly links the Nixon drug policy to racism and the civil rights movement and the response to the war in Vietnam. I don't want to move into a conspiracy theory discussion at this point in time. However, do you see a link between the war on drugs and racism?
Yes. For me, I strongly believe that war on drugs has been imposed by the governments to fight their enemies and people, civil society, or the movements who want to make a change. So statistically, I have read that article as well. It shows that like in the United States, there are more black Americans or black people in prison rather than white people. So it clearly shows that there is a racism involved in drug policy and war on drugs. It's the same with my country, where, or not only Afghanistan, but other countries as well, where you see a lot of people goes to jail just because they don't accept the government and they just try to impose them somehow into war on drugs and taking using drugs. So I strongly believe that racism, our current drug policy, our current convention with the United Nations is a very racism policy which needs to be changed.
There was recently an editorial I read which was looking at the movement towards harm reduction, and they were comparing, it was a U.S. Editorial, and they were comparing the response to the, you know, what was called then the crack epidemic in the United States in the 80s, and the incredible repressive response to that. And that was primarily impacting black community in the U.S. And they were contrasting that to a more harm reduction approach right now. And the calls, particularly in the U.S., for treatment, the calls to decriminalize, the calls to have more harm reduction programs, and they were suggesting that maybe part of the reason that harm reduction is now being proposed is because those being most affected are no longer black people. Those being most affected are white drug users. Do you have any thoughts on that position?
I mean, I'm very happy to live in this current era as a young guy, which I can clearly see a lot of radical changes towards drug policies in the world. And for me, I don't consider if it's a white guy or a black guy. The moment it's being opposed and they're being criminalized, so it should be changed. And I'm glad that at least, even if it's this, whether we say it's racism, but at least now the government of United States is feeling that there's more risk involving in the current policies they're imposing. So if it changes, it will definitely affect positively other people as well.
Beautiful. So as we wrap up our conversation, is there anything else that you think is important to highlight or anything that I missed that you want to address when it comes to harm reduction in young people?
Well, right now we are in a process of United Nations General Assembly special session in 2016, which is happening in April, which is something I would really like to insist upon so that all the government and stakeholders take it very seriously, because especially with young people. And then the motto of this ANGAS 2016 is creating a better future for a young generation. So I say there is no future generation. Young people suffers from drug war. Young people suffers from repressive policies on drugs. So I would really call for a change in Angus, and I'm really hopeful that governments and state members should do something if they are really concerned about young people and drugs. So it would be very nice to include harm reduction in their outcome document, which is they are going to discuss in Angus. But the zero draft of the outcome document is very disappointing for us, because there's no mention about harm reduction. There's no mention about providing access to harm reduction services to young people. And we know as young people that there are a lot of problems and risks for us regarding the current policies. So I will really hope that this time we will see a change as a young guy.
Absolutely. I really hope so too. I've been following the UN Assembly around this, or the sort of lead up to this, and I too am hopeful that there will be some significant changes, particularly as it applies to young people globally. I want to thank you very, very much for speaking with us today, Murtaza. I think you bring a great international perspective, and as well as introducing the topic of harm reduction, which is certainly a topic that I hope to cover more in coming episodes. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast.
Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher.
Visit us online at cycpodcast.org.